Next case is 04-122, Leslie Nickel versus Robin Carter. Mr. Sandwich.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please this honorable court, counsel for the appellees, I don't intend to reserve any time for rebuttal. This case arises as a certified conflict out of the Sixth District Court of Appeals based on the question of whether or not a ruling on a Civil Rule 35 motion for an independent psychological examination is a final and appealable order. This case originally started with a criminal jury trial involving the father, the appellee in this case, where he was charged with committing felony sex crimes against the appellant, my client, the minor daughter. After he was successfully acquitted, he filed a plaintiff in this case, a civil action against my client as well as other defendants, alleging numerous causes of actions, slander, conspiracy, malicious prosecution, intentional and negligent infliction of emotional distress. My client counterclaimed for the causes of action of assault, intentional and negligent infliction of emotional distress. It is as a result of my client's claims of intentional and negligent infliction of emotional distress that it gave rise to the whole issue of the Civil Rule 35 request for a mental evaluation on the part of the plaintiffs. The trial court, over our objection, granted that without any evidence being presented by the plaintiffs, in this case, the appellees, as to a need for the mental evaluation. Civil Rule 35 specifically indicates, as well as the cases that have interpreted, that good cause has to be shown at the hearing requesting that. You just can't rely on the pleadings itself, although I do acknowledge the pleadings raise the issue as to negligent and intentional infliction of emotional distress as to the potential for a need for a mental evaluation.
Wouldn't your case be stronger if you had dismissed that claim or had not made that claim?
I'm sorry, Your Honor?
Wouldn't your case be stronger if you didn't have that claim pending?
If those claims were not pending, I don't believe the assault claim, which was our only other claim, would justify the request for the mental evaluation.
Why do you think they can't get an independent examination if you have such a claim?
Why can't they get such an evaluation? under the cases that rule on Civil Rule 35 and Civil Rule 35 itself have a requirement that there has to be good cause shown, and it can't be there has to be factual information.
You think the filing of your claim, that you're making a claim for some emotional distress, is not good cause for someone to have an examination?
The Civil Rule 35 and the cases say that the pleadings by themselves, the claim, on the counterclaim, is not enough to give them the right to request it. They have to come up with some facts. Obviously, they would have the right to do discovery, depositions, whatever, requests for medical records, psychological records. That was never done in this case. Simply on the basis of their claim that they would like to have the mental evaluation done, they brought the expert into court and she gave her testimony as to her expertise and her background and her general knowledge of what occurs in cases like this, but there was no information as to what my client, the appellant, had in her background that would suggest that it was going to provide them with some information that they could recover and then use in this case.
I thought, isn't the issue for us to decide, the legal issue for us to decide whether an ordering someone to take a psychological exam is a final appealable order? There are four district courts that say yes, and there are a couple others that say no. It's a right. Certified conflict, isn't it, on that legal issue?
That is the legal issue.
I'd like to hear your argument as to why that order is a final appealable order.
Okay. This court, obviously, in 1993, handed down two decisions that dealt specifically with this, and the statute 2505.02 lays out exactly what has to occur. And the first thing is a substantial right. I don't believe there's any issue that my client has substantial rights at issue because of her own privacy regarding her medical issues and whatnot. Regarding special proceedings, I believe that's the issue that's specifically before the court here today, and I'd like to address that one because I think that's the difficult issue.
I think you should use some time to do that.
Right. The special proceedings, as defined by the statute, means an action or proceeding that is specially created by statute and that prior to 1853 was not denoted as an action at law or a suit in equity. The two that I believe gives rise to this is the intentional and negligent infliction of emotional distress.
There, let me stop. There was no right at common law for a judge to order, for a court to order someone to take a psychological, submit to a psychological exam?
That is correct. And the two causes of action that my client filed in her counterclaim that I believe gives rise to the current ability to ask for that test were both enacted by this court in 1983. And therein lies the potential problem with the current status of the law as it affects my client's issues. Because obviously the definition of special proceeding says that it has to be an action or proceeding that's specifically created by statute. And obviously it is this court in 1983 that created those two causes of actions. It was not the legislature. So if this court intends to modify the law by in terms of what my client is dealing with in this particular case, it would require that to allow her case to continue in this because the statutory issue is the problem with this particular issue. So I think the distinction in terms of what brought the case before the court, when the Court of Appeals raised the conflict issues, it was using the cases that were in conflict from the 10th Circuit here in Franklin County, which were all divorce, two divorce cases and one guardianship case. And it utilized the cases from the 4th, 8th, and 11th districts that were all divorce cases. None of the cases had the similarity to the case that's before the court today, which was a civil case, but yet decision or the causes of action is based on what were not known at common law prior to 1853. I have nothing further.
All right, thank you. Mr. Nunnery.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, Mr. Sandwich, my name is Jeffrey Nunnery. I'm here on behalf of the appellees, Leslie and Lisa Nickel. It is the appellee's position that the order entered in this case is not final and appealable due to the nature of the action in which the order was entered. And we would also submit that while there is a conflict between the districts as to whether or not such an order entered pursuant to Civil Rule 35A is final and appealable, there is a genuine conflict between the districts on that issue, but we would submit that this case is not the vehicle by which this particular issue should have been raised because of the nature of the underlying claims in this action. The cases out of the 10th Appellate District, Johnson, Schaff and Williamson, cited by the 6th District Court of Appeals, were all cases arising out of special statutory proceedings. The guardianship proceeding in Johnson was a probate action arising out of the probate statutes. Schaff and Williamson were post-divorce custody issues, again, actions which were not recognized at common law and were statutorily created by the General Assembly. The cases out of the 11th, 4th, and 8th districts, again, these were all cases that were either divorce cases or post-divorce custody proceedings, neither of which were recognized at common law and are purely creatures of statute. This case is different because of the underlying claims. We have all of the claims in this case are common law tort claims. And by virtue of this court's holding in Polakoff v. Adam, it does not meet the definition of a special proceeding. Therefore, you do not get to the second prong, and I would submit that the analysis is reversed, even though the statute says affecting a substantial right in a special proceeding. I think the first question that has to be broached is, does the proceeding itself amount to a special proceeding?
And the underlying proceeding, not,
correct.
Not the order to take.
Correct. Only if you answer the question, is it a special proceeding, only if you answer that question in the affirmative do you then get to the second prong of the analysis, does the order in question affect a substantial right? When the 6th District first certified this as a conflict, I grappled with the very question that you had, Chief Justice Moyer, as to whether or not the Civil Rule 35 order itself was one which was recognized at common law. And of course, it was not. It was an order that is purely a creature of the rules of civil procedure. And I wrestled with that initially as well. But when you read Polakoff v. Adam, I think that it becomes very clear that you're not looking at an order issued under the civil rules, because Polakoff v. Adam goes back and looks at the adoption of the Code of Civil Procedure back in 1853. So we're not really talking about the rule itself. We're talking about the underlying nature of the action.
The question is whether the order arises out of or arises from a proceeding that was recognized at common law or is a special proceeding. That's
correct. Correct. We would submit that this was merely an interlocutory order entered during the course of discovery, and that given the underlying the nature of the underlying causes of action, it is not final and appealable by virtue of the nature of the order itself. So I guess the question for this court becomes, do we tackle the issue of this Civil Rule 35A, the disparity of the treatment of Civil Rule 35A between the districts on the basis of this particular case? And of course, this court has the right to do so. We argued in opposition to the court accepting this case, basically stating that, yes, there's a conflict, but this is not the case by which to reach that, question. However, the court has the ability to do so, and we would submit that the question of substantial right then becomes, what is the nature of the harm, potential harm, to the party against whom the order was made? And Justice O'Donnell, to address your question, I think that there is no substantial right or harm to a substantial right in a case such as this, where the party raising the claim puts the issue into controversy and establishes good cause through the pleadings. Although the Johnson case out of the 10th Appellate District relies upon the old Amato case, Amato versus GMC, and what constitutes a substantial or a special proceeding, they do talk about the situation where the plaintiff, by virtue of her pleadings, establishes good cause through the pleadings, essentially through a judicial admission. And I read the plaintiff or the defendant's counterclaim a little bit differently than what I've heard here this morning. I believe that in the counterclaim under the assault action, it is alleged under the assault claim that the appellee caused emotional and physical distress to Mindy Fenton. So it's not just under the negligent and intentional infliction of emotional distress causes of action that the issue was raised. It was also raised under the assault claim itself. So I think that it's there under three separate causes of action. And by making those statements, making those judicial admissions, that the appellant herself has established good cause for the psychological evaluation. The evaluation would have either tended to prove or disprove those allegations in her counterclaim. So if the court does choose to reach the issue of whether this affects a substantial right, we would say that it does not, by virtue of the fact that the appellant herself put that ball into play. And if the court doesn't have any other questions, then I would submit my argument as it stands.
Thank you, Mr. Nunnery.
Thank you.
Mr. Sandwich, you saved a little over 8 minutes of your time. You said you did not want rebuttal. Have you reconsidered that? All right. The case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion. We'll take a brief recess.
All rise.